mine and yours. And you don't want no pressure, what but a backup and withdrawal. Cause trust me when I tell you, you don't want that you can claw. And you don't want to see inside of my... Chapter 70. I can't do this, Shu thought frozenly, knees knocking together in terror, as the soldier behind her shoved her down the trail, toward a distant, innocuous pile of logs. The mountain air was warm with summer sun, wafting a scent of crushed yellow bonnets and a surprising taste of salt. The trail leading towards the logs was half dry, half patches of muck, every foot had to step around. The Fire Nation had hidden enough caltrops in wet holes that nobody with sense put any part of their body where they couldn't see it. And all of it was a blur, angry murmurs of men drowned out by the pounding of her heart. She'd seen the results of Zuko's war of attrition since that awful day of the mud avalanche. Seen them, heard them, smelled them. The wounded, the maimed crying out for an end to pain, the wet shreds that were all that had been left after careless scouts had charged a fragile barricade of brush and dirt. The barricade had been fragile. The spring-loaded slivers of steel behind it, not so much. Spring-loaded blades, scorpion bees hidden in clay pots, weevil rats lobbed into the supply train. Tunnels hollowed under green patches of grass and herbs, filled with rattle vipers all too willing to bite what stepped on them. Every rock, every tree, every patch of weeds might hide another booby trap. General Fong had been forced to use his scouts to comb every last inch of ground before his main army set foot on it. And the general was not happy. After all, scouts were highly trained soldiers. Usually earthbenders. They were valuable. They were finite. And Zuko's killing them. Lucky for Fong, there were plenty of less valuable people available. Lots of farmers, no few refugees who'd apparently been trying to find places with the farmers, and one stray silkweaver. I can't do this, Shu thought. I'm going to die. This isn't even my war. Deep breath. A warm hand pressed against her shoulder, the shorter woman supporting Shu when she almost stumbled. It's okay. We're going to be all right. No, we're not, Shu croaked. Some of her vision seemed to clear, and she glared hate at the slabs of stone sheltering a general. You can't do this. This is crazy.
Days ago, the Avatar invaded the Fire Nation to battle the Fire Lord, General Fong said sternly. A 12-year-old boy, the last airbender, the only survival of that peaceful people the Fire Nation murdered, has taken up arms to face the most evil creature this world has ever known. In face of that boy's courage, how can even the most frail citizen of our kingdom turn away from battling such monsters? Firebenders, who have the temerity to lay claim to Earth Kingdom territory, and the black treachery to lie in the Earth King's name. His tone softened, now only proud as steel. It's barely a few more miles to whatever firebenders might be able to build as defenses. Be proud. With your aid, we will crush them under the stone fist of the Earth Kingdom. Spirits, she hated him. And she hated Sergeant Bo more. He just let them take me. He just let them... Another shove, and she almost bit her tongue. Keep your head together, the refugee woman murmured. If this one's the same as the others, there should be a riddle. The sheer incongruity of it seemed to crack the ice in Shu's brain. A riddle? Ice was turning into white-hot shards, a blazing fury that threatened to choke off thinking almost as much as the fear. Are you telling me these things are a game? More like a prayer. The woman's green eyes fixed on a scrap of white, pinned to the ground a few yards ahead of the barricade. General Fong has a reputation.
A reputation for doing this? Xiu hissed. The soldier had fallen yards behind them, but she put the thought of running out of her mind. She had to. Fong had shown he could and would sink men into the ground, then shove them wherever he wanted. At least if she had her feet free, she had the illusion of a chance. Then why hasn't one of the nobles done something? King Bumi's half crazy, but if anybody tried to use Omashu's people like this... Her companion almost laughed. I guess I didn't say where he has a reputation. Huh? Read it. She nodded towards the paper. Let's see if we both have the same solution. She took a deep breath and sighed it out. I want to see my family again in this world. Her voice turned rueful. You know, my husband's going to tell me, I told you so, and I'm going to nod and say, yes, dear. This is a lot more adventure than I was looking for. You're telling me. Xiu looked her up and down, trying to piece together accent and clothes and the odd calluses on her hands. That suddenly didn't seem to fit. Those aren't farmer's hands. Who are you? My name's Luli. The older woman smiled. I wonder if you're the Xiu I heard about. She waved at black characters on paper. So, what do you make of that? Respect to the lord of the land is never unwise. Xiu shook her head, fury and despair churning in her gut. If bowing down to the Earth King did any good, I wouldn't be here. Luli started to speak, then obviously changed her mind, and gave the weaver a look in askance. On the farms, we heard that Prince Zuko's men shot copies of the treaty right into the general's camp. Didn't anyone get to read them? Maybe, Xiu said warily, shifting uncomfortably. What does that have to do with... Under her foot, something clicked. Down! Luli dragged her to the earth with a mother's ferocious strength, their knees and hands thumping into disturbed soil, heartbeats before steel keened overhead. Screams behind them. Xiu froze. We're dead. We're... Thumps, as if the air itself wanted to rattle her bones. Smoke billowed around them, stinging midnight clouds. Run! Xiu let Luli drag her, head reeling, hands skinned and throbbing. Luli was charging right at the barrier, and that didn't make sense. One of the bigger logs, a stump, didn't look right. She's going headfirst into that. Bark brown tore like paper. Xiu felt her jaw drop as she was dragged through and regretted it. Whatever was in that smoke burned like cine chilies down her throat. She ran anyway. Smoke and screaming were behind them. General Fong was behind them. And her feet wouldn't take her anywhere closer to him, no matter what disasters might lay in wait. Fear and pain and craziness, and she couldn't go back. Her father would tell her not to go back. Fong was as crazy as any Qin villager, and nobody thought there was anything wrong with that. When had some of the army gone crazy? She never saw the rope. She did see sky and ground flip places as someone yanked her up, blood rushing to her head, robes falling into her eyes. Oh, spirits, what now? Sergeant! Luli's voice, upset. Upset, not scared, Xiu tried to think, mouth full of her own loose hair, the world spinning around her. I'm trapped, I'm going to die, and she can't even scream? Orders, ma'am. A rough, matter-of-fact man's voice, moving closer to her. Miss, Fong's going to need time to clear that area. But Earthbenders can move pretty damn fast. Now, if you're a good Earth Kingdom citizen, well, you did your duty, and you obviously got caught by some sneaky, dishonorable Fire Nation types who, lucky for you, just couldn't stick around to do all the evil things everybody knows Firebenders do, right? Shiu tried to blink silk away from her eyes. This made no sense whatsoever. But if you're not, well, you're probably good. But maybe not good the way Fong thinks. He's kind of a few coals short of a bonfire. And that was a woman's voice, which really didn't make sense, given it bounced up to her with a metal armor jingle. So if you're kind of a sane person and you figured out Fong's the kind of guy who throws bamboo knots into a fire just to watch them go boom, and you know nobody does that because, hello, splinters, could take your eye out. Fushi. The man's voice was stern, but you could have sworn there was a laugh in it. Right, wasting time. Got it, boss. Pale hands lifted cloth away from Xiu's face, and gold eyes grinned down into blue. There you are. Want to come with us? They're going to get away, Sima called over the wind. Tao let his glance flick to her glider, swallowed hard, and casually banked about 90 degrees from the direction red armor was scampering through greenery. Then let's go this way. He couldn't see Sima frown behind her own goggles, but he could read it in the hunch of her shoulders. Still, she followed as he turned away. So if Fong did happen to look up at the little flecks of color in the sky, they wouldn't be showing him where Zuko's people were getting the woman to safety. Thanks, Sima. And he dropped back to tell her that, but losing any speed or altitude here just seemed like a bad idea. Freeing one hand for a moment, Sima waved it through the tricky little wiggle that wafted up an extra breeze, so she could catch up to easy listening distance. Something you wanted to say? She was grinning, Tao noticed, catching the flash of teeth in the shadow of her wings. He couldn't blame her, even if Chang Chang did lecture them about eating bugs raw. Riding the wind was awesome. Being able to call your own wind when you needed it? There weren't words for the way that felt. Yeah, he called back. Thanks. Glancing back behind them, Sima lost the grin. So, this is a good thing? I don't know, Tao admitted. I don't think I've ever seen that woman before. No way, Sima said firmly. I saw her shadow. She's tall. Despite the mess behind them, Tao grinned. So far, he was ahead of all the other gliders in airbending, but Sima was one of the best at judging distances on the ground from high in the air. So if we don't know her, she shouldn't be part of this mess. I'm glad she's still alive. Yeah, she is. Sima's voice was small. But what happens when the general goes after them? They'll hit more traps, Tao said honestly. I know. Even from these heights, they'd seen all too many of the dead and wounded after one of Dragon's Wing's riddles hit home. Why won't he just stop? Sima burst out. Tao snorted. It's not funny. No, it's not, Tao said ruefully, shifting his weight to take more advantage of the wind. It's just, I've been thinking about that, and I think I figured it out. He winced. Why did War Minister Qin keep coming? He knew we had the Avatar on our side. But General Fong's Earth Kingdom, Sima protested. I know, but that doesn't mean they're different. Not when it comes to fighting. Tao grimaced. Or more like, why they fight. Fong wants the world to work his way, and he's not listening to anyone who tells him it doesn't. Not even his own people. You couldn't really see expressions from 1,000 feet up, but you could see motion. The jerky way that strange lady had moved, walking up to almost certain death because any other option would be worse. She was so scared, Sima shuddered. I hate this. I hate all of us. The prince is killing people and you don't think he's wrong, Tao said bluntly, gathered his courage, and told the truth. Neither do I. The edge of her wing dipped before she got herself back under control.
But it's horrible.
Yeah, it is. I wish I could hate him, Teo said fervently. I wish I could hate all the firebenders. But if I did that, I'd have to hate our people too.
But why?
Seeing better doesn't always mean you know more of what's going on, Teo thought. Because even if Zuko's setting up those traps to kill people, he's not the one making people walk into them. People who aren't even soldiers. And that was yet another twisting anger in his gut, even with a cool breeze to waft calm through his hair. He'd fought the Fire Nation, sure, even though he wasn't a soldier. Everyone in the temple had. But nobody had made them fight. Everyone in Dragon's Wings was fighting. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't fair. But it was at least their choice. They're giving Fong the same chance we gave Qin, Teo called over the wind. Go away and no one gets hurt. Just go away and leave us alone. Or else. For a long moment, they just rode the wind, turning toward the greenery that cloaked Asagitatsu's rim and cloaked other, more vicious things. Teo guessed, though from up here he wouldn't know a trap until it bit him. You know what's weird? Sima said at last. It kind of reminds me of some of those arm swirls Lang Chui was showing us. Does, doesn't it? Teo said thoughtfully. Deflect your opponent's force away. Never take a blow if you can dodge it. He cut a glance toward her. Give the other guy a chance to stop himself. But they're fire, not air. Her shoulders shifted, sliding her through the wind. They can't keep dodging. It's not what they do. No, it's not. Teo caught the updraft curling off the caldera wall and used it to turn with Sima, circling up like a gyre eagle. Inside the bowl of earth and sea, terraces spread out below them, waves shimmering with white foam near the docks, fish and seaweed drying in the sun and hung over burning fires. Look at that, Sima. One crazy earthbender in there and they could lose everything. And oh, the irony burned. Zuko had told him that, and he hadn't believed it. Not then, because firebenders might burn crops and forests to the ground, but earthbenders didn't attack farms. Everybody knew that. Everybody but Fong. You could see his army's track gouged this way from the air. Everything that should be summer green and gold, now seared brown and dying. Teo glanced down at flickers of flame, where Zuko's people were carefully prying the pressure out of Asagitatsu, one bubble of fire damp at a time. If Fong tears up the caldera the same way he tore up the farms. What about the caldera? Sima called to him. Had he said that out loud? Or maybe the worry was just too obvious on his face. I was thinking about the gas and the earth. From Sima's grimace, so had she. I think it feels better than it did last week. I just wish they could pull the plug on all of it instead of just poking little holes. She went pale. Teo nodded, grim. We should land and talk. A few more minutes, and they'd snagged some thermals up to one of the temple's highest towers, touching down on sun-warmed stone. Teo used the grab stick his father had made to snatch one of the tie-downs, locking his glider against buffeting winds before he rolled free. Sima, you okay? Collapsing her glider, she shivered. It's like a cork in a wine bottle. Dragon's Wings keeps punching little holes so the pressure can bleed off, but if Fong rips the cork out... Teo shared her wince. I don't think even Aang could stop it. And even if Zuko was wrong and Asagitatsu wasn't strong enough to wreck half the world,
The people down there don't have a whole mountain between them and the blast. They'd be torn apart if Fong didn't beat the volcano to it. And he's going to try. He's making his own people walk into death traps just to clear the way. If he's willing to do that just to get to Firebenders... Zuko was right. General Fong didn't want Dragon's Wings gone. He wanted them dead. Zuko was right. Teo hunched against a chill breeze, memory a sour taste in his mouth. He'd brushed off the Firebenders' warnings, convinced they couldn't be in real danger if they just told Fong what he wanted to hear, if they just talked to him. The temple's lowland relatives had tried talking. The track of ruin scrawled over the earth showed how well that had worked. What can we do? Sima was chafing her arms, chilled. Teo had to take a second to look, to be sure, because lately none of the gliders seemed to get cold, no matter how brisk the wind was. It's not like fighting Qin, Teo. They're earthbenders. Earthbenders who think they've got the right to throw out anybody who isn't. Teo grumbled. Even when it's their land. He stared into the distance, suddenly shaken. Teo? Teo had to swallow. Twice. We're not earthbenders. No, but... She dashed to the parapet, looking in the direction of Fong's army, though you couldn't quite make it out from this angle. You don't think... I don't know what to think, Teo admitted. Except that Zuko was trying to warn us, and I didn't listen. Sima glanced back at him, eyes wide behind her goggles. So what do we do? I'm not sure yet, Teo breathed. But we'd better start thinking. Fast. Woof, you look like the wrong end of a hurricane night. Sitting down by the small fountain, Xiu pulled the warm green blanket a bit tighter around herself, trying to muster a glare for the grinning firebender, tucked into a corner of Amaya's house of healing. It wasn't easy. He wasn't wearing armor. He was almost leaning into a brazier to get closer to its heat. His black hair was sticking out at all kinds of awkward angles, and that wicked grin had just the least rueful tilt to it. Like her father's, when something had gone spectacularly, but not fatally, wrong. And he had a cast on one ankle. How could he be a properly scary monster of a firebender with blue-painted white plaster from foot to knee? Charming as always, Rikia, Corporal Shioni said dryly. For all the time you spent in the capital... One would think even a man with your thick skull would know better than to compare a lady to a storm-drowned idiot. Hey, ixnay on the capital thing! Rikia waved shushing hands, wincing as his weight shifted. I'm an honest man these days. Ask anybody. I do not have to ask, Shioni smirked. They tell me, in great detail. He glanced Xiu's way. Mistress Xiu, Lieutenant Sato or one of the other healers should be here to check you shortly. If you find Private Rikia bothersome, please hit him over the head. I'm certain he will enjoy the attention. A red shadow of armor and knives, he swept out of the room. I'm not that bad, Rikia muttered. Am I that bad? Xiu drew in a breath to tell him exactly what she thought about the past few weeks of insanity, of being sacrificed by an Earth General and rescued by a crazy refugee from Ba Sing Se, and firebenders, and abandoned by the refugee when her family showed up, which, okay, husband and children, Xiu could mostly understand that. But Luli had left her with more firebenders in the middle of a crazy town full of people in green, blue, brown, and crimson. And now she was with a firebender in a waterbender's house of healing. And when had the world gone crazy? She sobbed. Oh, not good. I think Moriaki left some tea over there. I can warm it up. I'm not supposed to be walking on this.
Move, and I let Gia use you for earth healing practice. The blue-clad healer bustled in with a basket full of herbs and fresh bread, rich with a scent of spicy oil that made Shu's mouth water. The scrolls say earth and bones are tightly linked, but maybe you'd like her to get a little more practice before she tackles your ankle.
Yes, ma'am. Sitting still. Honest.
Rikia slid a pleading glance Shu's way.
Help! Mom on patrol!
Shu translated that look.
He's asking me for help?
What is this place? She managed. Who are you? I didn't see you with Chief Hakoda's fleet, and they wouldn't send one of their benders to help the Fire Nation.
They didn't.
The matronly woman looked her up and down, checking for visible injuries.
I am Amaya, originally of the Northern Water Tribe, and now of Dragon's Wings. Though I spent the past few decades in Ba Sing Se, up until a few months ago.
Ba Sing Se? Hsu repeated, flummoxed. You mean Luli's not the only one here? It sort of made sense. A little. Maybe.
Almost everybody here is from Ba Sing Se,
Rikia filled her in. Except for those of us from the Suzuran. And some Yu Yan. And the folks the prince picked up in Gaipan. Interesting people. Just a little twitchy if you mention the word flood. And you want me to stop talking. I can do that.
I doubt it, Amaya said wryly. Though if you could slow down, it would be appreciated. You Marines may eat rattle vipers for breakfast, but she's had a rough day.
For breakfast? Who have you been talking to? Sukakuni, right? Rikia waggled his eyebrows at Shu.
Poor newbie still hasn't gotten the hang of marine cooking. Never have them for breakfast. You spit roast them, then dice them up with eggs and garlic on a strand of noodle. Much more classy.
Shu blinked at him.
They take some getting used to, Amaya advised, dipping her hands in water to run glowing fingers over Shu's head and shoulders. But Sergeant Kyo's squad are very good people, even if a few of them are thick-headed.
Hey, I resemble that remark!
Oh, she hadn't even noticed how much her head was hurting until it stopped.
Shu cleared her throat.
What's going on? You said the prince, so Lee, I mean, Prince Zuko, really is here? With people from Ba Sing Se? Why?
Luli was right then, Amaya said thoughtfully. No one in the Earth Army believed the Earth King signed a treaty with Prince Zuko.
Would we believe it if Fong fired stuff at us about the Fire Lord signing off with King Bumi?
Rikia shrugged.
Though from what the boss says about Bumi, he's crazy enough to invite airbenders to move right into Omashu. Guess we're just lucky Earth King Kuwe wants us between the Earth Kingdom and the temple.
Between? Shu got out. It felt like she had the edges of a tattered scroll, trying to unroll it and still keep the pieces together.
The treaty's really real? But why would the Earth King give up land to,
Firebenders, Earth refugees, and other scattered misfits my apprentice has picked up along the way? Amaya smiled. According to King Kuwe, historically Earth and Air can have problems trying to live together. He wants airbending back in the world, but he wants it to have a fresh start, without stirring up the old quarrels. Putting fire and its allies as a buffer between his people and the gliders sounded like a good idea.
Airbending?
Shu's head felt healed, but now it was reeling again. Working out a treaty with Prince Zuko got several hundred problems out of Ba Sing Se, gave Kuwe a precedent for future treaties if the Avatar succeeds. Earth loves having precedents, and was supposed to give us all somewhere we could live without bothering anyone. Amaya's smile turned wry. But I don't think Kuwe ever predicted General Fong sticking his nose into the middle of everything. Now that was an understatement.
Airbending?
Xiu repeated, numbly accepting the spiced roll Amaya handed her. She looked at Rikia, who'd at least acted like he was making sense. And you're a firebender, and you're helping them? I'm sorry, this is just so weird. You should see how weird it is from the other side of the fire, Rikia said thoughtfully. We're the boss's squad. We go where he goes. Which probably makes more sense if you know about my boss, Sergeant Kyo. The rumor you need silver arrows to kill him? Completely false. It's never worked. Amaya clapped a hand to her forehead in disbelief. Private Rikia. Right, start from the beginning, the firebender nodded. I first met the boss when... Oh, let me make something perfectly clear. The artworks, I won't lie, they were mine. Very classy. But I was totally innocent of the loaded dice. Your tea is growing cold, Uncle Iroh observed.
Tastes the same either way.
Zuko sipped cooling leaf juice, comparing the note Teo's gliders had dropped with the array of Earth Army markers arranged on their map of the area. Some of Teo's observations matched what they already knew from scouts, spyglasses, and judicious use of the war balloons the gliders had let them borrow in the scramble of Fong's arrival, and somehow neglected to take back. The others? Huh. Hard to tell what was lack of experience, what would have been hidden by tree cover, and what was really something his scouts had missed. And Teo's, with years of experience gliding over valleys, hadn't. He can figure out where we're venting by checking out the air currents. Air that's been hanging out with clouds bends different from air that's taken a detour through stone. That's interesting. It wasn't just vents Teo had found, either. Professor Wen would want to know about the shreds of a ruin on the rim of the caldera. Just a few crazily piled boulders on the outside. But some of Teo's gliders had turned up bits of the same odd blue and silver glazed cups that rested in the White Lotus cache. And the fishy sea salt draft through it meant it had to go much deeper than the shrink swell clays cloaking the outer edge of the caldera wall. Deep enough to carve through mountain stone. If this were another White Lotus site, who knew what might be in there? Even if it wasn't, the fact that there was anything left from before Asagi Tatsu had blown her top the last time hinted at even more bending techniques they might be able to recreate. Stone didn't stand up to volcanic blasts by accident. Still, that was for after they didn't have Fong breathing down their neck. For now, Teo was a trained glider, not a trained scout. And even Fong wasn't dumb enough to miss gliders overhead, or the advantages eyes in the sky could give. He had to be taking countermeasures. But at least Teo's figured out that Fong's not their friend, Zuko thought. That might keep the temple alive, if he's not just trying to play one of us off against the other. Zuko rubbed his forehead, trying to drive off reflexive paranoia. Teo was like Aang. He believed in people. Some of the elders in the temple might have considered playing cow chicken with two armies, but anything that underhanded hadn't even crossed Teo's mind. Probably. Warmth moved next to him, as a former general swept his own gaze over their predicament.
Staring at the map will not change reality, nephew, Iroh said quietly.
I know that. Zuko winced, looking at the figures that were their best estimate of Fong's forces, poised to spill over into the channel of hills that led to the most passable low point in the caldera wall. A steep, thin gap, like a chip out of a bowl. The chip was where Fong would hit the first line of solid defenses,
bent stone walls, sheathed with mucky logs and laced with sharp steel from ruined tanks. Effective, strong, but with all too few defenders staffing them. There should have been more we could do. I have known units of the Fire Army who would have done less with the time and materials we had. Iroh rested a hand on his shoulder. If the worst should happen, I have sent word to contacts in the north. They may yet come. Even should they not, Fong has no ships and is unlikely to seize any soon. We will retreat to Suzeron and let those of Earth among us teach us how to wait. We will win this, Zuko, so long as we do not lose heart. So long as Asagi Tatsu's fires keep burning and the drowned don't come back to throttle us all. Though Zuko kept that morbid thought to himself. Uncle saw spirits, but apparently that wasn't the same as getting drafted into sorting out their disputes with humans. The closer Fong got, the more the caldera felt off. As if even the wind that fanned Asagi Tatsu's flames was fragile, unreal as the paper streamers actors used to play bending. I should check on the sentries. To be sure the battle line is where you left it this morning, Iroh chuckled. Nephew, your people know their duties. They will not fail. Knowing your duty doesn't keep a boulder from landing on your head. One last scowl at the map, and Zuko tucked Teo's letter up his sleeve and headed outside. Nodded at the guards that fell in behind both of them. Damn it, that was annoying. He'd looked after his own hide for years. But the people Lieutenant Teruko trusted to be subtle and still keep his skin intact all had more important things to do right now, and nobody was willing to risk him wandering around alone. One of Fong's men just might get lucky. I hate being important. Even this high above the harbor, the afternoon sun was fierce. Their gardens were growing green with summer's long days. Ogami nuts needed more time to ripen, but if his people had read the soil right, root crops should give them their first harvest soon. Everybody had a place under a roof, everybody had clean water, even if they'd had to rechannel a few springs to get it. They'd hammered out a basic set of laws people were willing to live under. There was even talk of a flag. And now Fong's here. Damn it, we must have wounded at least 1 in 10 of his men. Why won't he stop? Fanatics. Zuko hated every last one of them. There's got to be more I can do. There's got to be something I'm missing. And it was going to be a long slog up to the chip, damn it. Should they rig up more pulleys to get supplies up there faster? Or was the risk not worth it, since it might give Fong's non-bending soldiers their own advantage if Fong managed to take the defenses? As it stood, the chip was half its own defense. Rock, yes, but volcanic rock. Not the sandstone and earth most Earth Army benders trained with. It didn't break the same, and according to Shirong, it took a lot more effort to bend it if you had no ties to fire. Which still wouldn't keep Fong's men from bringing chunks down on their heads. A waft of fishy smoke wrinkled his nose, and Zuko held his breath a moment as they walked on. Fish made good glue, and he was glad for that. Kind of. No matter the stink. Because good ink needed glue, and even with people's loyalties, keeping stressed out people from each other's throats took so much ink. Wait a minute. Zuko? Unfolding Teo's letter, Zuko moved just out of the range of the smoke. Fishy breeze, salty, something about a smoke taste? Licking a finger, he checked the breeze. I think that way. We need an earthbender. He met Uncle's gaze, grim. I think I just found a crack in our wall. Climbing up out of the pile of slanted boulders that must have once been a cellar wall, Iroh gazed down the slope leading to the chip, relief mingled with satisfaction as he brushed stone dust from his beard. I believe this is far more than a crack. Absolutely amazing, Tingcha Wen murmured, studying the sketch he'd made of the contorted tunnels leading through volcano-twisted stone. His socks squished against his sandals. Apparently, the cracks in the tunnels let rain seep in through earth and stone above, and some of the passages had been knee-deep in water. How did they build it? When did they build it? Did they know they were on top of a time bomb? Don't believe this, Zuko was muttering, black hair gray with daubs of clay slip, wafting away into dust as he paced. How will we ever seal this up in time? Even if we seal it up, Fong's scouts are looking for disturbed earth. They'll find it. Sealing this gift would be premature, Iroh declared.
Gift?
Zuko sputtered. A magnificent gift, Iroh declared, pointing below, toward the shadows along the slope curving away from them, where their chip opened. From here, we should have a most excellent view of Fong's army as it attacks the first wall.
A view of...
Zuko's good eye narrowed as he eyed the slope below, obviously gauging distance, elevation, and how hard it would be for even an earthbender to make his way up fragile clay slopes.
Huh, that might work.
The timing will be crucial, Iroh noted. Too soon and not enough of Fong's forces will be within our trap. He smiled, stroking his beard. But if we are wise and hold our hands until the time is right, I have told you before, nephew, the spirits look after those who keep faith with them.
Zuko shot him an aggravated look that turned into disbelief and a heartfelt groan, and his face buried in his hands.
Nephew? Iroh frowned. Mute, Zuko lifted a hand to point up and past him. Puzzled, Iroh turned. What in the worlds? A white and brown shadow, skimming through the sky toward the Northern Air Temple. A very familiar shadow.
Oh dear, Tingcha murmured. Surely that isn't...
Tell me something else it could be. Anything else.
Zuko still had one hand over his face, as if to blot out painful reality.
Uncle, you asked the spirits for help again, didn't you?
Iroh grinned, amused despite himself, at what Aang would soon find.
Ah, well.
Stop doing that!